Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for stopping by once again. Just in case you happen to be new to this podcast, you are listening to your favorite blockhead, the only podcast in the podcasting world that can somehow incorporate the Peanuts comic strip 1 minute and then be talking about MMA and Warriors Inside the Octagon the next. I am your host. My name is Brian Little. I have been a fan of Charlie Brown the Peanuts my entire life, so that's my comic. I happen to be a huge UFC fan, so on the back end of this podcast, you're going to hear some current day, up-to-date news and information from yours truly about MMA, a little bit about the UFC, what's going on over there. So that's what you can anticipate if you want to stick it out for the rest of this show. We'll tell you, got some exciting news. We have some new merchandise. There is a new t-shirt store for your favorite blockhead t-shirts. Not that the others are discontinued. It just means now if you want the other design that I have, you can go to Store Frontier and you can look up your favorite blockhead. Or you can go to yourfavoriteblockhead.com/blog. Look at today's episode. You're going to see the link for Store Frontier, and you can get yourself a t-shirt from there. Now, if you go and check out my other website, ko-fi.com/yourfavoriteblockhead, that one would be where you get the other t-shirts that the little redhead girl makes. So there's two kinds. You have the one with the emblem on it. You have the other one that has YFB where you can get the podcast at. That's going to be through ko-fi.com/yourfavoriteblockhead. You buy me 3 cups of coffee, you get yourself a t-shirt at a discounted price. I normally run those t-shirts at $15, but if you do it through ko-fi.com/yourfavoriteblockhead, tip me 3 cups, you'll get yourself a $9 t-shirt. So a nice little discount there if you go that route. Either way, you have 2 choices now at this point on which t-shirt you'd prefer. So that's kind of exciting news on this end. To get into the comic strips, there was one that was released in 1983. Charlie Brown receives a letter from Marcy while she's at summer camp, I believe, and it says that she's lonely. Well, he starts to question himself, why would she send a letter to myself? This was up on Charles Schulz Museum not too long ago. And there's been a shift in the 1980s about where Lucy will always be a fuss budget. She'll always be one that will be nagging Charlie Brown and telling him how he's inferior. But it seems like in the 80s that Sally kind of wears that hat a lot more than she used to. There's a lot more sibling rivalry during that time period, during that decade, where Sally takes a lot of the low jabs at the numero uno blockhead, which is Charlie Brown. She says that's a kind of a mystery why she would like you, that and the Bermuda Triangle, which, you know, that's kind of unfair to give him a low blow like that. But if you look further into the story, there's been a Bermuda Triangle of sorts for a long time between 3 different females when it comes to Charlie Brown. There is Peppermint Patty, the tomboyish girl figure. There is Marcy, the sweet intellect. But you've also got the childhood crush of Charlie Brown, which is the little red-haired girl. And these 3 get referenced a lot. There's going to be a lot of pull between all of them. And then there's an episode that came out in the 1970s called There's No Time for Love, Charlie Brown. That one will kind of give you a better understanding of what direction these go. I'm not going to give away the entire dialogue, but what happens is Charlie Brown is going to a different school than Peppermint Patty and Marcy. They both are taking a school field trip to this art museum. Well, somehow they make a wrong turn. Instead of following the crowd into the art museum, they make their way inside of a supermarket. Well, they don't make the connection. Apparently, the only one that comes close is Marcy saying those look like a stack of tomato cans, and everybody's going, no, that's pop art. Or Sally says something about a display of dinosaur bones. She's like, that looks like a meat market, and they're even on sale. So the only one that seems to even remotely get the idea might be Marcy, but everybody else goes along with it and just thinks they're inside the art museum, when in reality, they're in a supermarket. Which is going to pay dividends for Charlie Brown, because at the end of the episode, he gets an A on his report, where I believe it was Miss Othmar that said on his paper, your analogy was delightful, comparing the art museum to a supermarket. Now that was a stroke of genius. So there's a lot of fun moving parts in this episode. But you can see how there's a part where Marcy confronts Peppermint Patty and says, you like Chuck, don't you? And then, of course, she gets very defensive and says, how can anybody be in love with boring, dull, wishy-washy old Chuck? Well, Charlie Brown sighs because he's on the other aisle over, and he hangs his head and makes his way back to the bus. Well, you can see Peppermint Patty race after him and kind of the Nightingale effect where she feels sorry for him, but she also likes him at the same time. Well, either way, that story is there. It's very present in that episode. And then at the end, Charlie Brown just doesn't get it because he goes, I wonder if the little redhead girl would, which of course sends Peppermint Patty into a frenzy. So either way, that has been going on for a long time. There has been, Charlie Brown has been caught for a long time in the middle of a Bermuda Triangle of sorts between these three females in the comic strip. And I guess the only quote that could possibly even come remotely close to matching Marcy, because there's been people I saw that were leaving comments on Facebook, on the Charles Schulz Museum website, that were saying, I always wished deep down that Charlie Brown and Marcy would get together. Well, in the direction of the narrative of the comic strip, that would not have worked for the Peanuts. I'm not saying that from my own perspective. It's just to keep this intrigue there. And then as you look throughout the years, by the time we get to 2000, when Charles Schulz meets his demise and finally goes and meets his maker, by the time that we have the last episode in February 2000, it just doesn't make any sense through the entire story of the comic strip. But of course, you can cheer that from afar and hope. The only quote I can think of, there was a quote that came from Greek mythology. It might have been Jason, if I'm not mistaken, when he was looking for the golden fleece. There was a quote in there that said, there is dignity in effort, even though one's fate is preordained. So good for cheering on Marcy, even though she never was able to get with Charlie Brown. But, you know, there's always that hope that he would, a light bulb would go off and he'd go, why am I wasting my time with the little redhead girl when I could chase after Marcy? But it just never happens, and really it probably never should have. That's a little fun story. Another thing I have no control over is that there are trains in the background. So those of you that are doing podcasting and wonder how you can avoid these little problems that come up, the truth is, you can't. I've already recorded this at least three times dealing with microphone issues, and now I can do nothing about the train whistle. So we're just going to have to move along with this episode as we speak. Now, the second thing I really wanted to bring in today was, some of y'all don't know that I grew up with also not only Charlie Brown, but the Andy Griffith Show. That's always been a very special TV show for me. I've always had that playing in the Blockhead Mansion in the background whenever I can. But it seems like the more I look at cinema, it seems like they appreciated Leave It to Beaver more than they did Andy Griffith. There are so many references I can give you where Leave It to Beaver was referenced. 8 Mile, there's the rap battle where he says that Leave It to Beaver line almost killed me. Even in Fresh Prince, there's a hilarious episode where Uncle Phil is going, I don't even know what to do with the two of you, talking to Carlton and Will. Will says, well, you should reward us for being honest of what we did, because that's what happened with the beef, which of course sends Uncle Phil into a tirade. Do I look like a white man named Ward? Which, of course, obviously not, but still, fun episodes there referencing Leave It to Beaver. Then there's even more that come up. I happen to be a huge Weird Al Yankovic fan. I can thank my best friend Jeremy for that one. And one of the famous songs that they did in the 80s was Dare to be Stupid. There's even a line that says, you can be a coffee achiever, or you can sit around the house watching Leave It to Beaver. So there always are these references that I've noticed, and I've had to go, okay, the only one that seems to go to bat for Andy Griffith lately really seems to be Rascal Flatts when they did Mayberry. But either how, there was even a cartoon episode. Some of you from the 90s might know what I'm talking about. In the 90s, there was a cartoon All-Stars to the Rescue cartoon. They started off showing you President George Bush and Barbara talking about staying away from drugs. The whole point of this episode were the cartoon characters helping this one boy make the right choices and not drift down the route that drugs will take you. But in the beginning, he's already addicted because he's broken into his sister's room, stolen her piggy bank, and is breaking into it. And of course, we've got characters like the Smurfs, Alvin and the Chipmunks. You have the cartoon character of Alf, the cartoon animated series of that. You had Garfield. You had the Muppet Babies. And then there's a part when they're under the bed watching this happen, and everybody's in shock. But out of nowhere, you have Alf who gives this off-the-cuff remark and says, Wally never did this sort of thing to the beeves. So I'm just asking if any of my friends in the Blockhead Nation can explain to me how that Leave It to Beaver can be so much more revered out there in cinema than the Andy Griffith Show was. Leave me a DM. Leave me some type of comment. I would love to know, because I certainly cannot figure it out. This public service announcement is brought to you by your favorite Blockhead. Go check out all the independent podcasters on the YFB Network. This network was started to collaborate and to grow every single one of these podcasters, and many more to come. Check out who we currently have. The Rated JG Podcast, The Paddler's Playbook, Loud and Opinionated with Russ, Casually Kicking It, The Burnout with Chris Barnett, The Sharpen Your Sword with Brock Richard Podcast, and Talking Creative with Don and Ozeal. There are many more to come. There are some that are sitting in the lobby right now, ready to sit in the hot seat with your favorite blockhead. So the network is going to continue to grow. What we need from you, Blockhead Nation, is to go check out these other podcasts. Give them a 5-star review. Give them a rating. Subscribe to their shows. And let the world know that this is a group of podcasters who will get you through your week. We'll also live by the 3 E's. To educate, to entertain, and to edify. Go check out the YFB Network today. Our scripture of the day comes from Hebrews chapter 5, verse 9. And being made perfect, he became the author of eternal salvation unto all men that obey him. I'm reading this straight from blueletterbible.org. This is straight from the reflection from this particular scripture. Once Christ obtained his human perfection, he became the source of eternal life. And eternal life is given to those who obediently accept, this is key, accept the gift given to them by God, since Jesus was our interceptor. I'll leave that for you, Blockhead Nation, to ponder today. But as we get into the section most of y'all have been waiting for, the MMA section, and my phone has blown up more than I can possibly remember since this spectacular knockout from Joaquin Buckley. Just a couple of weeks ago, this was a guy that just had a very average background, a very average win and lose record from Bellator. Didn't appreciate how he was treated over there. He comes over to the UFC. He's coming straight off a loss from Kevin Holland from Fort Worth. And now all of a sudden you have this knockout that is easily, possibly KO of the year. Not ready to jump on the bandwagon still at this point as far as the greatest knockout of all time. But I can see just by how quickly this thing called Twitter blew up with people like Uncle Dana himself, Israel Adesanya, Nate Diaz, Francis Ngannou, Justin Gaethje, all saying that this is one of the greatest knockouts they have ever seen, completely in awe and shock. The whole world is paying attention to this guy named Joaquin Buckley now. And this came off of the prelims. So it comes down to when you look at what's at stake. When you have somebody on the prelims, there's not a whole lot at stake except for his win record to make his way into the main card. Well, now at this point, you have somebody who has definitely earned himself a bonus. Dana White couldn't even wait to get to the post conference to make sure that he knows that he is getting a nice little paycheck for this performance. And really, if we break down the intricacies just for a second, when I went back and watched this, what I was most impressed about was not so much that he pulled off the move, it was how quickly he could do the pivot. Now, if you notice that his leg is caught, and meanwhile, for him to be able to pull off this round kick, what you have to do is you have to pivot your foot another direction and then do your turn to where you do the spinning wheel kick. Now, that's never mind the fact that he's going to be in midair doing that. So I give all the praise to Joaquin Buckley. I definitely don't see how anybody could surpass this late into the year, going on into December. The only one I can think of is somebody going to do, this has already been done actually, where you run off of the cage and do a Superman punch and catch a knockout. But when I say that, what else could possibly be done when you have these anomalies like this? You got I don't want to call it a one and done, but who's going to surpass it? I can already say that it might very well belong in the top 10, but what was at stake was not a championship bout, was not a main card fight, was not even a co-main event for the evening. That belonged to Corey Sandhagen, who still got a nice little knockout. But there have been other ones that have been discussed at this point. Edson Barboza pulled off a beautiful spinning wheel kick that had knockout of the night. You have the scary knockout heard around the world from Francis Ngannou to Alistair Overeem. You have that amazing moment that happened from none other than Demetrius Johnson, where he does this takedown on Ray Borg and turns it around into an armbar midair and then gets a submission. You have the 5-second flying knee from Jorge Masvidal to Vin Askren. But all I mean is I'm not ready to... The jury is still out with the YFB court at this point when I talk about Buckley's knockout being the greatest of all time. Buckley having performance of the night? Sure, I can go with that. KO of the year, it's going to be very hard to surpass that one at this point. It's a little bit harder when you look at the obstacles and the stakes and what position they are on the card. But couldn't be happier for this guy being able to live out his dream. To do another shift, another thing that's come up, that was what blew up my phone the most this last week. Just recently got off an episode of the Nightly Rant with Mike and Toria because he wanted to talk about it so quickly. And now we come into another discussion about the current lightweight champion of the world, Khabib. Now, if any of you happen to know your laws, there's so many of them to keep up with that have been identified as a law. Not a theory in science, but a law in science. There is one called the law of conservation of energy. Now, to give you a brief example, so you don't have to look it up too much. Now, if you were going to go knock down a bunch of bowling pins, would you prefer to use a bowling ball or a baseball? Now, the common sense answer to that, I would hope, would be the bowling ball. Now, if you were going to pitch the ball and you happen to have a pitching arm on you, we might have a different discussion. But if you're going to give that kind of energy, usually when you convert it into something, that's where the energy is going to take place. So the bowling ball being bigger and being able to spin all the way down the bowling alley into the pins is going to have the most energy behind it. So speaking about the octagon, that very much works inside of the cage where somebody creates pressure. A perfect guy to think about when it comes to the law of conservation of energy is Max Holloway. This guy knows how to lead with his jab so that he can eventually take you on with the right cross, or he can get a cut on you like he did with Brian Ortega that leads to the end of the fight. Now, that's all kind of jumping conclusions. That's kind of surpassing what I already want to talk about. But it seems to me, when we look at social media, when we look at all of the interviews, Khabib has shown an anti-law of conservation of energy. Why do I say that? This applies in the octagon. It doesn't seem like it's applying to Conor versus Khabib, because Khabib is not wanting to respond to anything that Conor is giving him. He doesn't really seem interested in wanting to face Tony Ferguson, and he certainly doesn't want to give Conor McGregor the time of day to be able to face him in the octagon again. It's an answer of, I've already fought him. What do I need from him at this point? If there's anything that's going to happen, my hands are tied with Justin Gaethje, and once we have that victory, then the only one that's left is, who am I going to face for number 30? Is he going to face George St. Pierre, who is arguably the greatest to ever do it? Is he going to face the flagship Bellator MMA fighter known as Michael Chandler, a guy that's coming over colored with so many Bellator colors, painted so deeply in that brand, that you wonder who is going to be number 30 when he surpasses Justin Gaethje. Now, I'm not going to go ahead and tell you that's my prediction right away. I want Justin Gaethje to win the fight. I really do. When October 24th comes, I will be cheering for Justin Gaethje. I just believe the monster that is Khabib Nurmagomedov is quite an obstacle to surpass at this point. But there is this anti-conservation of energy that's happening because he's not giving Conor McGregor the time of day. The discussion that's at hand is now Dustin Poirier. But Khabib is going, he is distancing himself. This was even talked about on ESPN with Stephen A. He's saying that, look, Khabib doesn't like this guy. And most of the time when you have two fighters that don't like each other, then they come together and they fight in the octagon. That is not the case at this point, seemingly, from Khabib. That there's not going to be a second chance at redemption for him. He's looking for other competition in Justin Gaethje or possibly GSP or maybe even Michael Chandler. To tie that into something else, Michael Chandler has been offered two things. He's been offered the ability to show up at Fight Island on October 24th to be a substitute if something happens with COVID-19. Let's say Justin Gaethje happens to be exposed or somebody in his corner gets exposed. Now everybody has to be quarantined. Well, Khabib now has a fight from Michael Chandler. When he shows up on weight and he's there in the background waiting for his number to be called. Now, if something happens with Khabib where he cannot pass borders and gets in the same situation he was with Tony Ferguson, well, now Justin Gaethje has a competitor that he can face. That's been what the intent has been at this point, bringing him. But once again, a Bellator MMA fighter like this coming over into the UFC and being able to surpass the rankings, there's something very special about that with Michael Chandler, but it's also very frustrating amongst all the other fighters. And when you look at the ranking system, you wonder what matters and what doesn't matter. But also, there has been a match that has been introduced. At least, as I understand, a fight has been offered, or at least it has been sent out by a man named Islam Mashkovich. This is a Russian fighter that Khabib knows all too well. He is not pleased with the fact that Michael Chandler, apparently by word of mouth, has said that he doesn't want to face Islam. As in, he doesn't know anything about the guy. He's ranked apparently number 12, but he does have a 6-win streak going on to the UFC. So I don't think Khabib is too happy with that. But what's funny is, on Chael's episode on Wednesday, on Your Welcome with Chael Sonnen, apparently he got a call from Khabib saying that if somehow Michael Chandler signs on the dotted line with Islam, Mikhachev, very hard to pronounce his name, I apologize, but if he pulls this off, if he is able to beat Islam in a fight in the UFC, that automatically opens the door for him to be the number one contender for the lightweight championship. This is from Khabib's mouth to Chael on their phone conversation. And he was able to share that on his podcast. He asked me, he said, if you're giving me this kind of breaking news, am I allowed to share that on my show? And Khabib is like, well, that's why I'm making this call, Chael, that you'll go out and say something about it. So a lot of fun moving parts at this point. We got a very interesting prospect in Buckley out of nowhere that everyone's paying attention to. You got Khabib, who is not giving Conor McGregor the time of day, but he is watching Michael Chandler and saying, "Why, if you say that you are as tough as you think you are, why aren't you taking this fight with Islam?" And meanwhile, he's saying, if this fight comes to be, then the number one contender is indefinitely Michael Chandler at this point, coming from the mouth of the champion himself. Lots of fun, lots of narrative, lots of conflict, lots of storytelling, and so much of this to keep up with, and you, the Blockhead Nation, have been somewhat informed on my end. Now, as far as tonight's main event, this one, Blockhead Nation, is worth watching. If you happen to have ESPN+, you want to watch UFC Fight Night for free, I encourage you to go check out the main event tonight. Brian T-City Ortega is coming off of his first loss against Max Holloway, the same guy who I said, when I think of law of conservation of energy, a guy who knows how to work the jab and be able to give in that type of pressure, convert the energy that can truly baffle his opponent. Not only was that true for Brian Ortega, but it was true for Jose Aldo. Now, Brian Ortega is coming off his very first defeat, coming back in to prove something. We apparently have already had a scuffle that TMZ captured between Korean Zombie and Brian Ortega. Apparently, he said he's going to slap the guy. But Korean Zombie, on the other hand, is known for just a guy who continues to move forward. This is a guy that's not affected by pressure from the other fighter. This is a guy just like Brian Ortega who have gotten the best of Frankie Edgar. And that says something about both fighters. This is a compelling matchup. And whoever wins, next stop is none other than the featherweight champion of the world, Mr. Alexander Volkanovski. At this point, there's already been words exchanged between Korean Zombie and Alexander Volkanovski. And also, Brian Ortega and Korean Zombie apparently don't like each other. So the story is there. The conflict is there. Everything you need, all the integral parts of this fight to work, are in place for tonight. Whichever side you go with, T-City Brian Ortega is dangerous. Korean Zombie is a very beloved fighter. You have number 2 versus number 4, and either way, this makes for number 1. But my question now is Max Holloway going to be standing in the way? Is he going to be the obstacle that is the go-between between that and the championship? Are we going to have a number 1 contendership, or are we going to have a chance at the featherweight title for whoever wins tonight? What is the next stop? And that's where the sport gets super exciting, guys. And I give you my analysis. I give you all of my thoughts on these fights. Go check out the main event tonight. Go check out all the guys on the YFB Network. Go check out Ribadan USA as he continues to travel across America to raise suicide awareness. Our thoughts and our prayers are with Ribadan every step of the way. If you still want a free course from Living Work Start, the OPET movement is still giving those out. You can go to opetm@gmail.com. and mention that your favorite blockhead sent you, and an OPAT movement can set you up with a free course to help us break the stigma and where you can raise suicide awareness. Just as Daniel Hurd says, one pedal at a time. And I give you that. Blockhead Nation, this is your favorite blockhead signing out. We will see you next week. Same blockhead time, same blockhead channel.